Thank you for staying with us for the last, I think it's the last important discussion in this track dealing with leadership, administration, governance, and our health system. And we are going to conclude by talking about the future. And I would invite you to participate, although we have very talkative panel members I just discovered, because I can guarantee you that you are just as well qualified as the panel members to talk about the future, what is yet to come. So we will see. It just occurred to me as we get started that one difficulty we all face when we talk about the future is to get control of the variables. I mean, that's what determines and makes it so difficult. If there were no variables, we could probably create a future. But there are variables. And I just talked to Dr. Handysides, and he reminded me that one set of variables have to do with the world economies. There are countries where Adventist health is well developed, and others where it is struggling to stay alive. So what will be the future of those sets of variables that are connected somewhat with the economies in the world countries where the church operates? Another set of variables has to do with the kind of Adventist health that we will see in the future. As we look at the present, we do have different kinds. We have big, acute hospitals and healthcare facilities employing tens of thousands of people in some countries, and some of them are doing well and making a lot of money, actually, in some cases, at some times. We have, as a friend of mine pointed out, home care opportunities, and that may be something that is close to the soul of Adventists, because that brings the healthcare provider very, very close to the needy person. And also in home care, we tend to get connected with the needs of the whole person. You know, you're home, you get sick, your family, and they're frustrated, and the weeds are growing in the yard, and no one goes shopping. So whole person care and home care comes very close together, and that may be something Adventists should think about as they plot a pathway into the future of Adventist healthcare. And then there's public health, which we've talked so much about in this conference. And our connections with public agencies, United Nations agencies and others, may just be a fruitful field for Adventist healthcare to develop new pathways for public health. So these are some of the variables. Where are they all taking us? We have experts. And we haven't heard from Dr. Handysides for quite some while. He's been moving around, keeping us all together on this conference. And since he is one of the path breakers in making this conference, I'd like to begin by just thanking you again, Dr. Handysides, for bringing us all together. It's been wonderful. And now, why don't you start out burdening your heart on what you see are the variables and the possibilities of the future of Adventist healthcare.
If this is working, yes, it is working.
It is now.
Well, to look into the future requires looking into a crystal ball. And I suppose the closest thing I have to a crystal ball are all of your faces that are in front of me. Because as the leadership of different regions and as leaders in the Adventist world, the future of the Adventist health system is in your hands. And I would not be so presumptive as to say that I know what the future is going to be. I have certain fears, and I have many hopes, but exactly what they're going to be, I don't know. People will say to me, tell me about the Adventist health system. And I preface my response by saying it's actually an Adventist network. And therein lies a simple problem. There isn't a system. Now, we are trying to move in the direction of a system. But we have many, many problems in moving towards a system. I'm not talking about the North American Adventist health systems. they, by and large, are up and operating very well. You may criticize them. We can criticize anything. But my experience with them is that they are headed by dedicated, very articulate, very learned people who know what they're doing. And if you're envious or covetous, you may begrudge their salaries, but they are reflective in the long, on whole, of the sector in which they work. In other parts of the world, we have a very spotty sort of setup. If you go to Australia, we have, Leon Clark is here, probably one of Australia's finest hospitals, the Sydney Adventist Hospital. If you went to Malaysia, went to the Penang Hospital, we definitely have the best hospital in the country, and we have the director there. But if we went to the division which tried to form a system, we found all the problems of Adventism, in that there were fears that the Adventist system would infiltrate and that the hospital that made any profit would have to prop up the hospital that wasn't doing very well. A very legitimate concern in the Adventist mentality. And that means that the system has to somehow have safeguards against that type of activity. You go to Africa, and we find institutions like jellyfish floating and being dragged hither and yon by currents and winds and tides and whatever happens to be there. Very little organizational structure. In fact, they weren't even planned. They arrived. They arrived because of a zealous missionary who walked to the end of the road and threw his bicycle down and said, "This is the place that the Lord has called me to establish a mission." And very often it was the place. But that may have been 60 years ago. And today, 60, 70% of the population has moved to the urban centers in Africa, where we don't have any hospitals, practically, because that wasn't the emphasis 50, 60 years ago. But the budgets for mission doctors have been reduced by at least half over the last 20 years, 25 years. And we've looked to the national physicians to run our institutions, but it's very difficult to run an institution at UCA and be self-sufficient when the population is indigent and can't pay for anything, let alone health care. We would have a much better chance in Lusaka, where people have jobs and are paid regular salaries. So we did suggest to the divisions, and the divisions of two of the three African divisions went ahead and established a board of governance to try to get some systematization into their policy, into their planning, particularly strategic planning. But you know, a hospital is like a sacred cow. Now, somebody wrote a book that's called Sacred Cows Make the Best Hamburgers. I'll tell you, it's easy to write the book, but it's very difficult to kill the cow. And we're not in the business of wanting to kill mission hospitals. But to take a hospital that pretends to be a general service hospital doing obstetrics, surgery, eye work, internal medicine, skin diseases, you know, to do everything, to convert that, and you've got two doctors trying to do all that, and say, listen, we should really make this into a hospice, perhaps. HIV, 75, 80% of our patients are HIV patients. Why don't we make this into a hospice? Why don't we move our people to a place where we could have self-supporting people? And then we would find we probably would be able to bring a lot of the national doctors on board because they could earn their own livelihood. You know, they're running practices there now. They tell me there are 200 Adventist physicians in the city of Nairobi. We haven't built a hospital. And the clinic that we have, we still insist on paying them on a church salary. We'd get twice as much work out of them if we put them on a fee-for-service basis. And it would still say Adventist hospital, Adventist clinic, over the portals of the clinic. and it would still grant to the church all the, you know, pride of ownership of a clinic. And I can assure you the doctors would work a lot harder because they would actually be earning their income. It happens every time a clinic goes onto a self-supporting basis. But then we could run bigger institutions, major institutions. So my dream would be that there should be a systematization take place. Systems should be introduced. My fear is that we won't have the vision amongst our leadership. We won't have the finances in our treasury. And that these institutions will collapse and degenerate. There may come periodic fillip of interest. The Willowdale Church will be interested in the Harry Hospital and provide $150,000 to build a new church, a new staff house. But we haven't changed the inherent status of the operation. AHI may come and help, and they do a wonderful job. But where have we built the permanency of progress into the whole program, not necessarily the individual institution? That's what I'm desirous of, and that's why, quite honestly, you had a leadership session to sensitize the leadership of the world church in all its different aspects regarding health, that there is a need to look to the future, to plan for the future, to organize for the future, to fund for the future, and to prune for the future if that is necessary. Because in the pruning effect, we always look for the fruition of a greater harvest. It's not a destruction of the tree. It's a care for the tree. And that's what we really need to do. So that's briefly my concept.
Thank you. Probably what we ought to end up with here are some comments on steps the health departments could take to secure a preferred future for Adventist health around the world. And I suppose that's why we are here. So in just a minute, think about what you'd say to Dr. Handesides and colleagues about your idea about the preferred future of Adventist health services around the world. Huh? But before we do that, quick comments from Ted and Leon on the same topic to get us thinking, and then we'll send the mics around, and I think you'll take them around, Connie, please. Thank you.
I think I agree with Dr. Handesides. I think we need to develop a coordination. I think we need to develop a unified support. In our hospital, we've done a lot with the Indonesian hospitals. We've worked with the hospitals out of India. We've done a little bit of work with the Philippines. We've done quite a bit of work with the Thai hospitals. We try to run our patients through there. I think that the church does need to integrate and work as a system, and we've been in favor of that as long as it's on an equal playing field. What I do not think is that we ought to take from successful. I've had union presidents in one union approach me, please tell our hospital what to do. Giving you an example, and I won't say where, but one hospital I visited, I said, could you start a secondary clinic? And they says, we do one. I says, how much do you make? We make a certain amount of money. Well, could you do more? Well, I don't know. Come to find out they could do 8 more, and they were being asked by that community to do it. All they had to do was start. The man didn't do it. So I took him to the toilet, literally. I took a $20 bill and I flushed it in front of him, and he had a coronary, because $20 U.S. is a lot of money to him. I don't think he's forgotten it to this day, because I says, I want you to remember, every month you wait, you're flushing that much money down the toilet at least, and probably every visit it's worth that much money. And I don't know if he went to the sewer and tried to collect the $20 bill, and I don't care. But I wanted him to understand what he's doing. Ellen White, as I said yesterday, owned a for-profit hospital. She paid for it out of her own pocket because the church didn't have the money. When it was paid off, She sold it, she gave it to the church, and her name is all over San Diego County on property that came with that hospital when she sold it off. She ran it as a for-profit to pay it off. There's nothing wrong with us making a profit. Penang Adventist just gave 50 free baby open heart surgeries to the Minister of Health of Malaysia. And that was our way of working a relationship with him. And we need to do that. My concern, though, as we move forward, remember this. We talk a lot about our water cure and our healthful lifestyle. Many of you do not know this, but John Harvey Kellogg was one of the best noted surgeons in the United States. Charles Mayo, who studied under him, when he saw a patient, said, "You've been to see John Harvey Kellogg." John Harvey Kellogg traveled with a huge bag of cloth and needles and practiced surgery. Battle Creek had a 200-bed surgical ward. We never talk about that. Surgery is where you make your money. But at the same point, I think the future may be in home health. But you have to go to where you get the money and pull this off. What does worry me is Dunbar Smith. I got to talk with him before he passed away. I have his book. He and a group tried to rejuvenate Battle Creek with its lifestyle, its vegan diet and everything, and it went bankrupt to the tune of millions. Now, I am very much a vegetarian, and Penang is a vegetarian-serving hospital. But Ellen White counseled us where patients insist we need to make meat, tea, and coffee available. You want to question me? Look it up under the name Flesh Foods in the research. I am not in favor of flesh foods. I do everything I can to avoid it. But we have to give patients their choice. We need to understand where we're running a general hospital, we're running it for the community. We should never back down on our principles. But at the same point, we need to respond to the needs of the community. Singapore closed, and that's part of the reason Singapore closed. It went down the road way too far. And so I'm very much in favor of us getting together. I want to see our doctors work together. I want to see our hospitals work together. I want to see the health departments of the conferences and the hospitals and all work together. I want to see the universities and the hospitals working together, because I think there's a lot that we can do.
Thank you, Ted. I'm sure you don't want to go down in history as the consultant who advised us to serve meat in our hospitals so they will succeed. But whatever it takes, making a profit, you say, is an appropriate thing. I mean, yeah. No margin, no mission, they say.
Yeah.
Let's go on to Leon for a final comment from the panel, and then we'll ask, what is the preferred future for Adventist healthcare in the world? Leon, you want to comment?
Yes, but to give a caveat first, I mean, predicting the future is a very hazardous thing. I remember in medical school, in our second year, one of our lecturers said something which I've never forgotten, and there's not much else that I learned in medical school that I haven't forgotten. But he said, please remember, out of everything I tell you, 50% in 10 years' time will be known to be wrong. He said, I just can't tell you which 50%. That's going to be
right.
Now that's talking about the present. If we're talking about the future, it's got to be somewhere between 50% and 100%, doesn't it? Because if we build on the 50% that's wrong now, how are we going to be able to predict what's going to happen in the future? But I think that's something Dr. Andreessen just said in his introduction to me, where he said he talked about more about not what is the future going to be, but what do we want the future to be. And I think that's the most important thing. You know, strategic planning, and I've read books like, you know, the Rise and Fall of Strategic Planning and all that sort of thing. You know, strategic planning needs to be something that we are involved with, that says we're going to set ourselves goals and we're going to work towards those goals, but those goals might change as we go along. Unless we look at the future in that sort of way. We've got to have some vision of the future, but we've got to understand that our vision of the future is going to change continually. And unless we're prepared to understand that, then we're going to find ourselves going down tracks where there is no return. And you know, whenever we look at a business, purchasing a business or getting into a business, we never do it without having an exit strategy, because we've been burnt There must always be an exit strategy whenever you look at doing something. How am I going to get out of this if it doesn't work? And I think we need to apply that principle to, you know, life is a risk management exercise. Life is a risk management exercise, and the same thing applies to looking at the future of healthcare. If you set your risk zero, your risk meter at zero, you will never do anything. And if you go to the other end, of course, you're going to find yourself in all sorts of trouble. But I mean, risk. We all need to understand and learn more about risk management and how to assess risk, and then understanding the risks, make decisions to go forward. You know, I think that talking in broad terms about where we go, and I really am not qualified to talk about anything except the acute hospital market. I've got enough to think about there, except to acknowledge that, you know, there is a lot more to the mission of the church than just institutionalised care, and I hear that we are over institutionalised, and I guess that is one of the risks that we need to understand, and being a CEO of an institution, that's somewhat difficult for me. But we need to get outside of our walls. Somebody just mentioned hospital without walls. You know, I think that's where we need to go for the future. You know, we're looking at building 170 more beds, but that's going to cost us around $150 million. But for next to nothing, we're developing a hospital in the home, it's the fastest growing area of our business, taking our hospital out to people in the home and having specific category of patients that we can treat in the home.
Future.
You know, intravenous infusion for antibiotics for people with pneumonia. And we admit them to the hospital in the home directly, mostly directly from our emergency department. You know, it's a struggle to get people to change their paradigm as far as that's concerned. You know, as soon as a consultant sees a patient in our emergency department, they'll admit them to the ward because they'll be able to see them every day and charge them a fee. If they admit them to the hospital in the home, they won't get anything. So, you know, money drives everything in the end. Having said that, I mean, no margin, no mission is a fundamental principle that I think we have to live by. It's really important. And I think we've got to look at both diversification and rationalisation in the same frame. You know, there is something that has been and can be called destructive collaboration, working together to actually rationalise what you do. It's very easy to start things. It's much more difficult to stop them. And we need to look at areas of our business that really aren't doing what we want them to do, and that has to be a combination of mission and money. And if it's not making money, we have to decide what contribution it makes to mission and how we support it, because in today's healthcare environment, that's a very difficult thing, because the margins that there are in acute healthcare in countries like the US and Australia anyway are very small. And that means we have to really look seriously at things that don't make a margin. So we've got to look at our businesses continually with that in mind, we have to remain flexible. We're looking at the moment at starting up, because cancer is becoming a much bigger part of our business, and because that will continue. You know, we're treating heart disease more effectively, people are living, and other things, people are living longer, and they're getting cancer, and that's going to continue to be so that the area of cancer treatment in first world countries is going to get bigger and bigger. So we're looking at making our new facility a tertiary level cancer treatment centre, and networking with other major cancer treatment centres to give us a place in the market which says that we can you know, we can take patients, if patients want, if they get cancer and they want the best and they want somebody who can give them that treatment right from the diagnosis through to either death or what we call now survivorship, that is those that don't die, and fortunately that's getting to be a smaller and smaller proportion, that we need to also manage their needs going forward, because it doesn't stop with physical treatment. In that space we're looking at palliative care in the home, and I think that's a big area that we really need to develop more and more. These patients are being admitted to institutions who really would be better cared for at home if we provide the proper support. And I recently had an opportunity to be involved in the death of my aunt. And I was really impressed by the way that that situation was managed by a home palliative care team, who actually said after she died, you know, after she died, to my uncle, who was probably the most medically illiterate person I know, and that's the reason I was involved, apart from the fact that this was my aunt, do you want them to take the body tonight, or you want to call the undertaker in the morning? And of course he was asked for guidance on that, and they said, well, would you like to sleep in the same bed with her tonight and say your goodbyes in that environment? Now, to me, that was very confronting. But for him, it was the most healing experience. That, you know, I was just blown away by the fact that, you know, he slept with her, he kissed her goodnight, he spoke to her during the night, and, you know, in the morning he was a different person. You know, I think we've got to look at different paradigms, different ways of doing things. We've got to look at complementary medicines. Whether we like it or not, it's there. And there are some very good complementary medicine treatment centres now, which we could use as a model. And in some of those areas, go back to our roots. Yeah, Sydney Adventist Hospital started as a place where people came to have complementary therapy. Now we've turned it into an acute surgical hospital, and we've got an emergency department, and now it's mostly a medical hospital. You know, I think there's a lot happening in that area that we really need to understand a lot better than we do. And it's an area that we could certainly develop and go back to some of the things that were our origins, you know, water therapy. And, you know, we're talking about diet, we're talking about a whole range of things that are foundational so far as healthcare, Adventist healthcare is concerned. And I think, you know, sometimes when you look to the future, you need to look to the, we need to look to the past and see where we've come from and what we can take from that, which we can take into the future, given that it's a changing world. But, you know, if we're not careful, it'll leave us behind.
Thank you. We have comments from participants here, and we'd like to hear from them. But appreciate getting us started with these wonderful comments and somewhat frightening comments. I mean, it did bother me that we are committed to public health. Everyone will live longer and get sick, and then we have to heal them. But I guess that's what's happening. Meanwhile, the quality of life, the quality and period of extent of good life will be prolonged, and that's a blessing as well. What is the preferred future? What would we like to see happening, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I would like to emphasize the future of healthcare, the future of hospital is outside hospital. Now, in this part of the world, especially in the Asia-Pacific region, we are facing these new challenges in health. Now, these challenges include, first, aging of the population. With the aging of population, we are seeing more chronic non-communicable diseases. Now, the second factor is changing disease pattern. Now, in the old days, we are dealing with largely infectious diseases. But nowadays, we are dealing with double burden of diseases. Infectious diseases, not only infectious diseases, but new emerging infectious diseases. like SARS, avian flu, and the present one, human swine influenza. Now, thirdly, is also rising expectation. People nowadays want more, not only more services, but better quality of services. The fourth factor is new technology, which means more money you have to invest. Now, the fifth one is the impact of globalization. The world is getting smaller because with people's movement, infectious diseases knows no geographical boundaries. Now, the other factor is financial crisis. In Hong Kong, we are facing financial crisis. So these are the factors. Not only, I think it is seen in many other parts of the Asia-Pacific region. So in order to deal challenges, our emphasis, just to share our experience in Hong Kong, is to promote health, prevent diseases, promote primary care, especially family medicine. Now the emphasis for the hospital is in our public hospital, we are dealing with four types of diseases or four types of categories of services. First, accident and emergency services must be provided. Secondly, services for the underprivileged, for the disabled, for the chronically ill. Thirdly, services which are very costly, like heart transplant, organ transplant. And fourthly, education and training for healthcare workers. So the future direction is really partnership, community involvement, and I would like to emphasize that we must work on a multi-sectorial, multidisciplinary basis. We have been talking not just medical side, but also allied health, the nursing side. They can play a very important role. So we must work as a team and also work with other sectors, because if other sectors contribute, we can do a lot. So this idea of shared care, shared responsibility should be promoted. Thank you very much.
Thank you for these comments. Very helpful. Thank you. Comment just in front.
I'm the CEO.
I'm
Frank Young, the CEO of the Two Adventist Hospital in Hong Kong.
Yes.
I'm not a doctor, but a certified accountant. So I would like to share three important things for the future of the Adventist Health Hospitals in my mind. Number one, finance, which is important. I support what Ted was saying, that we have to earn money to survive. We are a self-supporting hospital, and we need to earn enough money to survive, not to survive, but do it properly and financially well to run the hospital. We need to make money, and not only for the hospital, but also for the church. And in Hong Kong, we are doing very well, and I think I would say maybe one of the most profitable hospital in the Asia area, in our Adventist hospital. And we set up just in last year, we set up, 2 years ago actually, we set up 5% medical missionary fund for the health work in Hong Kong. We not only promote health work in the hospital to the community, but also help the church to do their health work. And we help the church, the Calvary Bay College, to do the health education center. We give them $1 million Hong Kong dollar per year, and we also help the union to do global Chinese evangelism. We give them a budget of $1.5 million per year, and those money that we feel we doing right, and God bless us more. So I think finance is one important area that we need to do well and keep our Adventist Hospital survive and existing for providing further service. Number two is the service. I think we need to provide service that the community needs. And we need to find our niche, because there are so many competitors. We need to find our niche and give our service so that we can survive properly and give quality care to the community. And we do need quality professional staff. If we don't have a quality professional staff, we will die. We need to provide a top-notch service to the community in order to survive. Number three, and I would say that as Adventist Hospital, we need to live with the name of Adventist. If we are Adventist, we need to do to help the church in the gospel spreading. Mrs. Y have a good gift from God, and I think we need to well utilize Mrs. Y's gift from God. That is our unique health message, and we need to stand firm and do it with 100% of our support from hospital. Say for example, vegetarian food, which is not welcomed by people maybe 30, 40 years ago. But nowadays, people see that meat is not a very good source of nutrition. And we found that more people would like to take vegetarian food nowadays. 40 years ago, when we started the hospital, the doctor's response was that that is not the type of food that we should provide. But as time goes, right now, since March 2008, we changed our hospital diet into vegetarian diet, from meat to vegetarian diet in Staff Road. Previously, a lot of doctors reject, but last year when we introduced it, only a few doctors rejecting it. And just a few doctors saying that they object, and they also say we are not going to send patients into your hospital anymore. But 6 months after what they say, and we found that they still keep sending their patient in, and they even send more patients to our hospital. And I think we need to stick with our principle. We need to give our unique message to the community. We want to be the leader in health. I think that is very important for our hospitals to survive and to make our hospital known as a unique hospital and make our hospital outstanding from the crowd. That's my message.
Thank you very much. Let's shift sides for just a minute. And if you don't mind, let's try to make the comments short so more can speak, and we'll try to summarize in about 10 minutes, Dr. Handesides, what we've heard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I represent a field in West Africa, West Africa Union Mission. We have two mission hospitals there. And I think the problems that we have been mainly discussed here are not quite the same, like, for instance, in Sydney Adventist Hospital or Penang or Florida Hospital, for that matter. For us, for instance, critical issues are personnel. Like, for instance, in Sierra Leone, which is where we have one of our hospitals, we haven't had a doctor for a year and a half. One left for Solomon Islands. He was the surgeon there. And with a general practitioner, we can't survive. We need a surgeon there. Now, probably there is light at the end of the tunnel now. That's what I've learned now. But as for the future, particularly the mission fields which operate small units, let's try to make a system available so that at least we can have the basic personnel that we need, because if we can't, then we have to close down. So this is from that angle my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go back here, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make three observations. One is on the quality. In many parts of the world, Dr. Henderson mentioned that it's not really sound. Some are very poorly managed or run. Is it possible that we learn Adventist education system with the AAA of accreditation system, that the leadership at the General Conference Health Department can help accreditate some of our hospital around the world? We got JCI and all those things from other organizations. Why can't Adventist have an accreditation system with our health care in the future? This one area for consideration. Secondly is on affiliation. We had a very good experience with Loma Linda going to China in Hangzhou, Sarun Renshaw Hospital, in the past 15 years. Loma Linda affiliate with this hospital and turned this hospital into a top-notch quality hospital and got JCI, one of the first hospitals in China, got JCI accredited. Now, why can't we have affiliation among our hospitals around the world, among Adventist hospitals? Can we have such kind of system that we can share resources? Then it comes to the third point, which is really finance and sustainability. Now, we need funding, we need advocacy. Look at the government managed care system. Very little portion of the resources have been assigned to lifestyle and preventive medicine. Now, Adventists can advocate having the managed care system to give more resources to preventive and lifestyle medicine. And Adventist Hospital can be the leaders in advocacy in this area. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go in the back to the left, please.
Okay, I'm Dr. Anuois Kahilig. I come from Calbayog City, Philippines, which is the smallest Adventist hospital in the country or maybe even in our division. We operate a 22-bed hospital. At times, there would be occasions that big hospitals would have equipment that would be very useful. And at times, it's a matter of coordination. I recall once that we were able to get equipment from Hong Kong Adventist Hospital. That was really something that we treasure. So we now could start operating an ICU, an ultrasound. And to mention Manila Adventist Hospital or Miller Sanitarium and Bacolod Sanitarium has doing its share. However, we had an experience that there was this Adventist hospital in the States that were about to dump 4 mammograms and an X-ray. And it seems that because of some incoordination problems or logistical problems, or there was no system available, I think they just junked it somewhere. And we really needed those equipment. I think we would have to come to a point in a way that there could be some sort of a clearinghouse where there could be a system wherein we could be able to say, we need an endoscope, or we need this. And whoever would have such an equipment that they would upgrade could be able to say, okay, we have a system, we could send it to you. We were even willing to spend for shipping because the cost of the equipment is far greater than the cost of shipping. So I think there has to be some way of coordination, as a clearinghouse, a system, wherein we could be able to address those issues.
Thank you. The other one, please, in the middle.
I am Dr. Makaya, the president of Manila Adventist Medical Center. He's speaking for the smallest hospital. I will be speaking for the biggest hospital in the Philippines. 9 of us, of the presidents of the hospital, are around, and 3 of our board chairmen are around. So looking at the future, as a challenge by our church, we bonded ourselves and we will form a Philippine health system. And in fact, we have already met and we discussed the bylaws, and we are on our second meeting, and pray for us, we'll finalize the plan. And we will take up the challenge of the future. To give you an example, Manila Adventist Medical Center is the only training hospital in our region, and we send doctors to Africa, mostly to Africa. And right now, on our own volition, we train doctors from Indonesia because Indonesians have difficulty going to the training program in residency. So we have 4 training programs that are accredited, including anesthesia, so we have 5. So some African countries are communicating with me to send their doctors to be trained, and we are just too willing to train them. And I would like also to make a proposal that aside from the finances, we should share our resources in training. Ms. Dr. Kahilig talk about supplies, but above all, I think it's incumbent on us, because we are a big organization, that we have to share our talent as Seventh-day Adventists. And talent for me, as an organizer or as a president of hospital, is the best thing that could happen to our hospital. Because a mistake of one president will cost millions of pesos or dollars for our hospital. And hospital is really a big business. That's my thoughts about.
Thank you very much. We'll take another comment and then we'll try to sum up what we have heard and see where we stand and how much time we have left. Please, to the left.
Thank you. My name is Patrick. I'm a physician in Switzerland. And I'd like to say something about this question of personnel in West African clinics. Do you have Adventist medical students, is my question. So I want to suggest that in all these clinics we have over the planet, we need a systematical approach to get Adventist medical students from all over the planet to spend 1 or 2 or 3 months in these clinics. And you can bet they will lose their heart in these places and they will come back.
Thank you very much. Let's see what we've learned so far and where we want to go with this. Starting from the most recent, a concept of a church, central church register of medical students, not only in Loma Linda, who have opportunities to serve and volunteer, but medical students around the world who might register and have opportunities to try out a medical assignment as graduate students or current students somewhere in the world to get involved in, to be informed about and involved in the global Adventist healthcare mission. Then we talked about sharing between healthcare institutions, maybe sharing personnel resources and equipment that could be shared if there was a register somewhat centrally where people could either list their surplus equipment or else list their needs for equipment. And we talked about, or you talked about, would it make sense for Adventist healthcare institutions to have some kind of an accreditation process whereby they could be reviewed, the work they do, by peers, as we do in education. I don't know if that will work in a highly regulated business such as healthcare, but something like that does exist in education. Then you talked about collaboration or extensions or affiliations between a mature and an emerging medical center across national boundaries, whereby a new hospital or medical facility could benefit by being an understudy, let's say, of a seasoned or experienced institution. Some of you suggested that we should think of providing health care outside the hospitals. The hospital without walls was an important concept repeated by several, and that's a place perhaps where our church could make a significant impact because it may require less capital investment. And finally, there was comments made about Adventist principles. They seem to resonate with public opinions about valuable health aspects to our healthcare concern, and speaking about that and the importance of that, these principles in our healthcare institutions were mentioned. Also, there will be new diseases. Someone mentioned that, and our Adventist healthcare system could take an interest in some of those because some of them may show up in the least expected places, and our church is very international and would have access to places where new diseases will show up. I think these were some of the ideas, Dr. Handesize. There are others, but maybe these were the main ones. Would you want to have a comment at this point, or you want to take, we are almost out of time. Maybe you should wrap this and see if some of this resonates with your own thinking.
It certainly resonates with the thinking of many of us who have been involved in this. What was not mentioned in all of this, and perhaps we're afraid to mention it, is that current church organization is geared towards ministry within the church rather than to administration of healthcare units, and presents many, many impediments to some of the suggestions that have been made. And maybe one day we'll come up with an Adventist medical mission agency that will be able to have enough teeth to accredit, to have enough power to send budgets, to cross all the multiple lines of church administration, the red tape, the boundaries. I'm a great believer in the church structure and organization, but I don't think it's really aligned with some of the needs and necessities of a global health system.
Well, thank you for that. The coordinator or chair is not supposed to make too many comments, but I have discovered that if you have a big task and a lot of obstacles, and we know how big the task is because you've spoken to us about the task, and we know there are a lot of obstacles because you mentioned them twice, the best way to move forward is to identify one, two, or three managing problems or managing manageable opportunities. Two or three things that are fairly easy to do. Start with those, be successful, and the success will breed a success in other areas. So I would not despair over this big organizational machine that gets in your way, but find some pathways through it for some key suggestions that have been made here. And some simple ones would be a register of current medical students around the world.
Well, I must tell you, we already have a program like that.
We provide that and make sure that everyone knows about it.
But as far as my experience goes, I know medical students here in Switzerland. There was Lucia last summer. She had organized herself a position in the Pacific. And then, for some reason, this clinic dropped this 3-month session. She couldn't go there. So she came to me and she said, "Oh, you know, Patrick, I think it doesn't work. They don't take me. So I think I will stay in Switzerland." And I told her, are you crazy? There are hundreds of Adventist clinics around the planet. You just have to find one and call them. And she didn't know this. Mm-hmm. She didn't know where to call. She didn't know how to find these addresses. When you Google Adventist clinic, free position, student, you Google this, you don't find anything. You find lots of these Florida hospitals. You find Loma Linda. You find Sydney Hospital. But we have these clinics in Africa, in South America, in the Pacific. And I would think about the register of these clinics. So you can't register the students. There are too many.
Thank you. That would be fairly easy to do. It would take a little time, but it would perhaps help the church harness human resources in doing this work. And these are the most valuable resources we have.
Another
Please come
idea and talk
that
to
would
me.
Not be difficult would be to link up, in certain cases, seasoned, experienced institutions and providers of health care with new ones, young ones. We do that in education, and it works reasonably well. So I recommend, Mr. Organizer, that there are obstacles, there are challenges, there are opportunities. Pick two or three easy ones and make them successful, and that will give us courage.
I want you to come and talk to me, because we have a wonderful program that Dr. Costa can talk to, whereby we send medical students out, not Loma Linda medical students, but we send other medical students out. Please come and talk to me.
Time is gone. Thank you for your attention and your support.